Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, a Radio Free Europe podcast on developments in Russia, its war against Ukraine, and its relations with the rest of the world. I'm Steve Gutterman, editor for Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus in the Central Newsroom at RFERL, and author of The Week in Russia newsletter. This week, the podcast is once again about Russia's invasion of Ukraine, a frequent topic, but I think the war is at a crucial juncture right now, with Russia making some advances on the battlefield, and U.S. weapons and aid for Ukraine still deeply in doubt. And my guest today on The Week Ahead in Russia is Dara Masiko, a senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and an expert on Russian military issues. Thanks very much for joining me, Dara.
Thanks for having me.
All right. It's great to have you on the show, a first-time guest. And I can't think of a better guest to talk about the state of the war at this time, both in terms of the situation on the battlefield in Ukraine and in broader strokes, kind of pulling back and looking at the prospects for U.S. aid and other Western support and what plans or goals Russia and Ukraine might have for the coming months. Let's start with the battlefield. It's been a little over 2 weeks since Ukrainian forces pulled out and Russia captured Avdiivka, a city in the Donbass that has been virtually destroyed in a months-long siege. And in those 2 weeks since Avdiivka fell, Russian forces have taken some more territory, I believe, both near Avdiivka in the east and further to the southwest in Ukraine. Now, these advances have come at a huge cost for Russia, as did the capture of Bakhmut earlier in the invasion. But they come after Ukraine's largely unsuccessful counteroffensive last year. And Russia seems to have the upper hand for the first time in quite a while. Certainly the prospects for Ukraine look worse than they did throughout much of 2022 in terms of the capture and recapture of territory. Dara, would you say that Russia is winning now? What are the chances that Russia's forces could make substantial new gains in the coming weeks or months?
Well, Russia has regained the strategic initiative on the battlefield since probably around November of last year. And for the past 4 months, they've been testing the entire front line and making attacks and advancing really slowly in most places. So to put this in perspective, they are trying to exhaust the Ukrainian forces in place. They know that they're experiencing ammunition shortages and they're rationing. They know that their manpower is getting attrited and it's not being replaced. So what they were doing starting last fall was pressing forward and trying to find a weak spot. And they found one. They decided to make Avdiivka their main effort. There's a few reasons for that, and we can explain later what their goals are. But what I say about Avdiivka is that Russia wanted it badly, and they got it badly. They hammered away at this small town for 5 months. They lost around 700 vehicles in the process, probably thousands of casualties that they don't acknowledge. But some of us are seeing this drone footage of the carnage that happened. The problem is that there are not that many locations left in Donetsk that are as well defended as that city was. Ukraine had around 10 years to dig in and make it a small fortress and really inflict a lot of costs on Russia to try to take it. Russia had advantages in the sky, they had the numbers on the ground, and they still had to hammer away for 5 months. The problem is that now that they have that location, what comes behind it, if they continue to push to the west, and so the costs to them could be lower. And unfortunately, what that means is they can and they are making more gains, particularly in Donetsk. They're advancing a couple kilometers every day. That's a problem there. And towards the south, in Zaporizhia, they're also trying to advance and reverse those gains that the Ukrainians made last year during their counteroffensive.
Okay. I'd like to Just this is a bit of a tangent, but it's interesting to me. You mentioned that Ukraine had about 10 years to kind of build up defenses around Avdiivka, and I guess that goes back to the initial Russian fomenting of war in the Donbass or invasion of the Donbass in 2014. What was did Russia actually take Avdiivka at the time briefly, or was that always held? It's quite near the city of Donetsk. Was it always held by the Ukrainian forces?
Yeah, it was. I mean, the things were fluid back then, towards that area before they settled, but I don't believe they actually possessed Avdiivka.
Okay. Now I'd like to take a broader look, or to look further into the future, I guess. It's always a difficult thing to do, but I'd like to look ahead maybe to the coming year, the third year since Russia launched the full-scale invasion of Ukraine on February 24th, 2022. Dara, you were kind enough to comment for an article I wrote around the two-year mark late last month, and I was focusing on the coming year, and you said that, quote, "decisions made now will determine whether the Ukrainian military is resourced to hold its positions through 2024, fend off Russian attacks, and rebuild strength for 2025 and beyond," unquote. And one of my takeaways from that, and I'll just mention that other analysts also spoke of sort of 2024 as kind of a decision, a year of important year, and spoke of 2025 as a time when the war would probably still be going on. But so one of my takeaways from your comment is that the coming year could be decisive, could actually determine the outcome of the war, even if it's unlikely to end in 2024. And obviously, the question of whether the U.S. Congress ends up approving some $60 billion in weapons and other aid after months in which this proposed package has been stymied by the Speaker and other Republicans in the House of Representatives is obviously crucial. Dara, can you answer these kind of You can answer these selectively if you want, but a few interrelated questions. What do you see as the main goals for Russia and for Ukraine in the coming year? How do you see the war developing in 2024, and just how important is the U.S. aid?
Yeah, so let me break that down into a few different parts. I think for Russia's goals, they have some interim objectives that they're working towards right now, based on what we see them doing on the front line. And I think initially, what they're trying to do is move to the boundaries of Donetsk in the north and Zaporizhia in the south, basically trying to claim all the territory that the Kremlin illegally, claims as Russia, those four oblasts in Ukraine. And I think that will probably take them to, through the year. Depending, of course, all of it's contingent on what happens to the Ukrainian armed forces and whether or not they are supported by the West with ammunition, and whether or not they are able to make crucial decisions on replenishing their own manpower. And looking beyond that for Russia, if I was looking out on their horizon line, if they're thinking about the war in 2025, do they have ambitions for opening up another offensive from Russia, into the Kharkiv Oblast? I think not, but I want to caveat what, because we don't know yet. I think we have to identify what are the conditions that would allow Russia to do something like that, open up a huge giant front from Belgorod again and try to take, northeastern Ukraine. There would have to be stability along the front line, and Russia would have to have the ability to generate and resource with equipment one to two combined arms armies, depending on what's happening again with Ukrainian forces to do that. Right now, I don't see any indication that they're doing that, but that's something that, obviously we are looking at how they're regenerating their own power for next year. In terms of what the Ukrainian armed forces are doing, they are striking Russian targets in Crimea and occupied Ukraine to try to erode some of Russia's advantages, whether that's how they resupply their units with ammunition, or they're trying to continuously degrade Russian air power or the Black Sea Fleet in particular. They are doing that. The problem is Ukraine faces two serious challenges, and there's just no time left to sugarcoat this. The delays in the House on critical ammunition for Ukraine is causing them to ration themselves. And eventually they're going to lose the ability to defend themselves if this keeps going on present track. The second issue, which is separate but is related, is manpower. And that's a decision that has to come from Kyiv. Some of these Ukrainian units are reporting that they are attrited, they've lost 30% in some cases of their manpower, and it's not being backfilled because there's a real hesitation for mobilization at this point because it's so costly.
All right, so those are two big challenges. And some of our reporting, our FERL reporting, on and near the front lines in the last couple months has kind of, I would say, supported that idea, certainly that there are problems with ammunition. Some of the soldiers, I believe, are calling it, shell hunger, and they're comparing, how many shells they were able to fire per day or now with last year, 2022. I guess that, as you said, separate but related, the situation on the front can't help affecting, the situation with mobilization, with getting more soldiers, to the front. So big challenges. I had one clarifying question about what you mentioned, that what might be Russia's goals, and you said, and I think other analysts also, said that Russia's goals may be flexible, depends on what they do gain and what happens, with the U.S. aid and how that affects things. But you mentioned apparently, seeking, probably Russia would try to take the Donetsk region and the Zaporizhia region. It currently controls parts of those two regions, and I guess almost all of Luhansk region, and then part of Kherson. Is like the full control over Kherson region also, do you think, in Russia's sights for this year, including retaking the city of Kherson, which is, I guess, the biggest city that, that Ukraine, that was occupied by Russia, but then was retaken by Ukraine?
I think Kherson in particular, particularly the western half of it on the other side of the river, and Kherson city itself is probably out of their grasp at this point. There's a lot of tricky challenges down there with the terrain that I don't see them having the ability to overcome or allocating enough resources to overcome at this point. And I should note that in their, in the Russian declaration where they've again illegally laid claim to these four regions, they don't actually specify boundaries, mm-hmm. and where those lie. So I think wherever they make the decision that this is as far as they're going to get, that's where they'll snap the chalk line. But Kherson, I think, has particular challenges for them at this point.
Mm-hmm. And a little bit more on sort of the effect of the U.S. aid or the lack thereof at the moment, and the flexibility, I guess, of Russia's goals. There's the initial attempt by Russia in the early days and weeks of the invasion in 2022. The main aim was kind of to take Kyiv, or at least force Ukraine's surrender, Ukraine's capitulation, the establishment of a pro-Russian government. Is there still, and of course Ukrainian forces were able to prevent Russian forces from seizing Kyiv, is there, beyond I guess maybe Kharkiv or parts of that, do you think there's sort of a chance that if things go badly that Russia could take even more territory in the coming year or a little more, and press toward Kyiv? I mean, you mentioned probably they're not, there are certain conditions under which they'd be in a position to, to press for kind of northeastern Ukraine, Kharkiv, but even further than that, is that sort of something that is potentially on the horizon?
Well, let me break that question into two different parts. So politically, the rhetoric coming out of Moscow is unchanged. I mean, just today, they were, you know, Dmitry Medvedev, former Russian president, is standing in front of a map showing, you know, illegally annexed parts of Ukraine as Russia and claiming, you know, like they're always Russian. Just a lot of gaslighting is going on. So I don't think that their strategic goals, that Ukraine is some, the remainder of Ukraine is subjugated to Russia and it's got a friendly puppet government in place, that hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. I think that what has changed is that they don't have the military means to force that issue in Kyiv. I don't see it this year. I don't see it next year. The personnel requirements for that are enormous. They don't have it, or they're not willing to do what they need to do to get it. If we're talking about another huge push from the north, also with the equipment, their raiding, their extensive stockpiles that have been in strategic reserve for, you know, decades at this point to sustain what they're doing right now. So I don't see the military means for something like that. But I also want to say that from the perspective of a Russian military planner right now, this is, you know, what I understand of them and how they look at different things. They're looking and they're seeing no real reason why they shouldn't press forward right now. Ukrainian units are being choked back on ammunition because of delays, mostly from the Americans. They are not replacing their manpower at the necessary rate that they need to. And they're looking out at the West and they're seeing, particularly in America, but maybe again in Europe, some wobbling. So for them, there's really no reason for that. Oh, and then they don't want the Ukrainians to dig in and have the opportunity to dig in and inflict costs on them. So from their perspective, they should press forward right now. That's how they think about this. So I think that this isn't a stalemate. And the situation is fluid, particularly in Donetsk, and potentially will become more fluid in Zaporizhia. And my concern is that Ukrainian units are hollowing out in place because of the manpower issues and because of the delays in American aid. And they will find themselves in a position maybe that Russia found itself in 2022 before they mobilized and had to, like, you know, reconfigure their war economy to support this war effort. So this is, you know, this isn't a stalemate. This is increasingly a brittle, concerning situation for Ukraine.
All right. Yeah, I mean, that seems like an important point, not a stalemate. There was a lot of talk for a long time, you know, and in some cases still has been about a stalemate. I think you make a good case that Russia, you know, one thing you mentioned, any kind of stoppage of, I mean, people talk about that in the context of a potential ceasefire or truce, or that would allow Russia to build up its forces, but it would also allow Ukraine to build up and to, I guess, dig in. I see what you're saying about Russia seeing no real reason, I guess, both on the battlefield and in terms of geopolitics or the situation in Europe and the U.S. To kind of stop pushing forward at the moment. All right. I think we will wrap it up here. It's a bit of a concerning assessment, but very very detailed. And thanks very much for your for joining me and for your insights, Dara.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Once again, I've been speaking to Dara Masico, a senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and an expert on Russian military issues. And my name is Steve Gutterman, editor for Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus in the Central Newsroom at RFERL. This has been The Week Ahead in Russia. Our theme music is Nye Strelyai, or Don't Shoot, a song from the early 1980s by Yuri Shevchuk and DDT. Please be sure to check out my newsletter, The Week in Russia, which covers the latest developments in Russian politics and society, as well as Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. Subscribe by visiting www.rferl.org.